Beaver Falls to Pittston, Uniontown to Phillipsburg, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, Pennsylvania Auditor General Tim DeFore has issued a scathing report on the Wolf administration's handling of the business closure waiver process implemented during the height of the COVID-19 pandemic last year. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is here to host a Capital Watch roundtable discussion. And parental support for the freedom to choose among more options for their K-12 school children is growing as lawmakers propose new ways to make that happen. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capital Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first we have news headlines from patownhall.com. The race for the Republican nomination for governor got more crowded this past week with the entry of former U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Pennsylvania, Bill McSwain. McSwain is a retired Marine who served as a U.S. Attorney during the Trump administration. His law and order stance stood in stark contrast to Philadelphia District Attorney Larry Krasner, who has adopted an extraordinarily lenient approach to law enforcement. McSwain was highly critical of Governor Tom Wolf's handling of the COVID-19 pandemic. He pledged to, quote, restore freedom and economic opportunity. Governor Wolf is term limited and cannot seek re-election, prompting the growing list of candidates. State House Republicans say the Wolf administration must issue a mask mandate through the regulatory process and not through what they termed exploitation of a decades-old law. At issue is Wolf's mandate requiring the wearing of masks in schools and daycare centers. According to the Center Square, State Representative Kathy Rapp of Warren County pointed out that the state is not under a declared state of emergency. Therefore, the Secretary of Health does not have the power to issue such orders. Meanwhile, state senators have proposed a constitutional amendment that would limit such arbitrary actions by cabinet officials in the absence of a declared state of emergency. The governor's ability to issue such declarations was significantly curtailed by voters last May when two constitutional amendments placing limits on his authority were approved by voters. Governor Wolf is also getting pushback to his COVID-19 mandates from labor unions. The union representing corrections officers in state prisons is asking the courts to review an order requiring them to get COVID-19 vaccines or submit to weekly testing. The union has also filed a labor grievance saying the policy was implemented unilaterally and requires discriminatory action as it does not require visitors or vendors to submit to the same requirements. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. When the COVID-19 pandemic struck in the spring of 2020, Governor Tom Wolf abruptly ordered the closing of so-called non-life-sustaining businesses. Waivers were granted, allowing some to remain open. But now Auditor General Tim DeFore says that process was flawed, inconsistent, and confusing. Here to discuss the report is our Capital Watch crew. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and by Matt Briette from Commonwealth Partners Chamber of Entrepreneurs. David?
And welcome once again to Capital Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. In the studio, your Capital Watch All-Stars, Rebecca Euler, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. Rebecca, thanks for being here.
Great to be back again, David. Thank you.
And Matt Briette, President and CEO of Commonwealth Partners Chamber of Entrepreneurs. Matt, good to see you.
Good to see both of you.
So it was a very eventful week in Harrisburg. And one of the things that stands out to me as being notable was, at long last, we finally got an audit, a real audit from the Office of the Auditor General about Governor Tom Wolf's catastrophic business closure waiver process. And this is something
if you can call it that.
But yeah,
process is a
very
is a nice
loosely defined. And this is something that we should have had last year. But the listeners might remember the scandal where you had the incumbent Auditor General at that time, Eugene G. Pasquale, who was running for U.S. Congress, and that he was endorsed by Governor Tom Wolf, that he was taking campaign contributions from Governor Tom Wolf. It's not good to be investigating someone who was also your most important political supporter. And so as a result, there was no audit. It never happened. It was sort of like a late press release, but not a real audit. We finally, under Auditor General Tim DeFore, we got an actual proper audit that was released this week.
Well, yeah, and the purposes of this, of course, is that, look, if we ever have to go through this again, and heaven please no, the Auditor General laid out some recommendations on how you can actually have a process that would be fair and transparent, which it was clearly not when you look into the details of this report. I think it's, what, a couple hundred pages, 160 pages or so?
Yeah, it's pretty dense.
Yeah,
and it was a sample audit that they took 150 waivers, and they found 45 of them to be questionable. So that's a failure rate of about one third.
That's right.
And Rebecca, you can join in with me on this, but just to refresh the listeners, in March of 2020, when the pandemic was upon us, that Governor Wolf, with no warning and with no input from the people who would be affected, that he issued a business closure order. That basically there are several things that the Wolf administration did wrong. And I would argue, number one, they ordered all businesses closed unless they had permission to be open, when in fact it should have been the reverse, to say, look, everybody stay open until you are specifically ordered to be closed. Then he also failed to recognize the work that had already been done at the federal level under the U.S. Department of Homeland Security as to what constitutes essential industries, and that most importantly, that the federal process recognized entire categories. Like, if anything that you do is essential, you're waived. If anything that you do touches anything that is essential, you're waived. Well, instead, Governor Tom Wolf, he went, picked things, through the industrial code. Yes, you can do that. No, you can't do that. And then he and his brain trust in the front office, they went business by business, and that the waivers once granted didn't apply to all similarly situated businesses. Yep. So you couldn't benchmark according to the directives that were actually issued by the administration what you, in your own circumstance, what you were supposed to do. It's nuts.
Right. And I think that it depended a lot on this new terminology the governor used last year was life sustaining, which was never really defined anywhere. It wasn't defined under federal law.
No, it was defined. But it was defined nine different ways.
Sorry.
And so it was so unclear.
Yes.
Like, okay. And there were 14 different revisions to the frequently asked questions. There were five different waiver forms that were – about confusion. And David, you mentioned – sorry to jump in, but
sure.
You mentioned they audited 150. Well, a third of them were also – people who were waived
didn't need
a waiver. But it shows how unclear this was.
Wasted effort.
Completely wasted effort. And the thing that I think is most offensive is that because everybody was ordered closed unless you had permission to be open, that businesses that could have survived did not have the chance to adapt. If only there had been a way to give employers the chance to safely serve their customers, look out for their employees, and keep the lights on, by having a lifeline of revenue of earned income from satisfying customers. But they didn't get the chance at surviving. But instead, those businesses were suffocating.
Right. And they did find ways to survive in other states. We know Pennsylvania had the second highest percentage of business closures in the country. And we will never know how many of those businesses didn't make it through the pandemic because of those closures. And that's what's so heartbreaking about it. We know that 30% of businesses were shut down in Pennsylvania across the board, and that compares to 19% nationally. So You know, it, and there are, like you said, long-lasting consequences to that. Those are family. A lot of them were very small family businesses that were their that family's lifeline.
Yeah.
And what, you know, in some cases that I know of had been in families for generations, and they will never come back. Yeah. And that is part of the consequence of what that waiver process was for those businesses. And it's heartbreaking.
Well, it's heartbreaking because it was so unnecessary,
yeah.
Right? I mean, you can understand and grant some grace when you're in a crisis and having to make decisions. But Governor Wolf included nobody from the manufacturing sector, from really the healthcare sector. I mean, we know that people running nursing homes were excluded and all. So across the board, it's kind of the lone Governor Wolf
yeah. mm-hmm.
approach that he did it all on his own, didn't include the people from supply chains. I know, David, your members as manufacturers, you know, it's great when you say, well, all of these, you know, healthcare related industries can remain open because they're life sustaining. But if they can't get the raw materials
yeah.
To produce
yeah.
the products
right.
they need, and there was like nobody there saying, wait a minute, maybe we need to think this mm-hmm. through. And do it like the other states that never even shut down these
yes,
businesses
correct.
Or made. I think Pennsylvania was the only state to have a waiver process like this.
Well, and again, the waiver process itself is so offensive because there was no uniformity, there was no transparency, and that there was no accountability for the consequences. And beyond that, and this is an issue that the Auditor General's report did not touch on, that you'll all remember that the Wolf administration, they set up this ad hoc waiver process, and then at one point they refused to accept further applications.
Yeah, close the window.
And yet somehow they kept issuing waivers well after the application window was closed.
Well, and the only thing that the Wolf administration could say in response is that, well, we're proud of the fact that nobody found there was undue influence or bad faith as a result of this, which to me, that is nothing to pat yourself on the back for when you had some of these waivers taking nearly a month to be responded to, many of these business being put on hold when they never should have been in the first place. Yet you have an administration, you know, reaching to pat itself on the back as though, well, we proved we were not being pressed by anybody or giving in to any undue influence.
It's like proving a negative. Like there was no proof that we acted in bad faith. It doesn't mean that you acted in good faith. It's just like there's no proof.
Fair enough.
Unbelievable. So you're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. In the studio, Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and Matt Briette from Commonwealth Partners. Of course, you know, this unilateral move by Governor Wolf to shut down businesses all across Pennsylvania with no input from the people who would be affected. You know, I wish that I could say that this was somehow strange or different or unusual for Governor Wolf.
The
but sadly, that's not the case.
Now,
No, this is the way this governor and this administration have operated.
Well, and the example, another recent one, well, this was at the very beginning of the pandemic. The one that most people are dealing with today is in their schools. Months ago, Governor Wolf had said he's not going to impose a statewide mask mandate in our K-12 schools. He was going to leave that up to the local school districts. And this is kind of similar to what we were arguing early on, is that, you know, closures and things like that ought to be done at the local level.
Correct.
This ought to, mm-hmm. County commissioners, they can decide, you know, what their hospital capacity is, the cases, and that ought to be decided locally where you can hold those elected officials accountable
correct.
The most, rather than from Harrisburg. Well, it seemed that Governor Wolf had learned his lesson on these things with our schools and left it to up to every single school board, the 500 school districts in Pennsylvania, to decide whether or not they were going to impose a mask mandate. Well, it became clear that Governor Wolf's wants were not being met by the school districts.
And this is, I mean, again, and this is partly what is so infuriating about the way the governor operates. Having said that he doesn't have the authority, and then explicitly mm-hmm. leaving it to the school districts, and then the mm-hmm. school districts went through their own contentious local process where some adopted mask mandates and others did not, and there was a shakeout, and all of that. You know, all of those emotions were vented to be able to get to the point where there could be a decision made in each community. And then
when more than 80% of districts decided we're going to make it optional, that parents can make that decision. Tom Wolf did not like that answer.
Well, and that process in the local school board level was very transparent. I mean, we all watched the meetings.
That's right.
There were, you know, videos online. It was a very, like you said, contentious effort, but those decisions were reached through a conscious effort through the local school boards. So that's the way it should work.
Well, and not only did he reverse himself saying, I don't have that power, he did it when school had already started for many of these families. And so lots of families having made decisions based upon what they expected to be the school board's decision with regard to mask mandates. Now they have another edict coming from on high mm-hmm. being imposed while school districts had already told those families, look, this is optional. Now they are having to enforce rules of mandatory masking. Now there are lawsuits, multiple lawsuits out there on this. We will see where this heads. But what it has done, once again, showing that the lone wolf is at it again and is more than willing to wield unilateral power and force that on people that, should have otherwise had the ability to make those decisions.
You know, and just the invincible arrogance to learn nothing from losing the constitutional amendment vote about the governor's emergency right. powers, like to receive a political rebuke of that kind, which is let's be honest, is completely without precedent.
Yes.
Yeah.
That for him to learn nothing from that, really, it's deeply disappointing, especially when you recall that as a candidate that he was the one who pledged, you know, his great transparency and effective government that works, yeah. he mm-hmm. promised.
Well, you'll remember even during the summer when the governor realized school boards are not doing what I want them to do, and that being imposing mask mandates, he tried to call the legislature back into session, ask them to come back and pass legislation, pointing to the very fact that you've made, David, that the governor recognizes that this should be done through a legislative body.
Yes.
It was done through the legislative bodies of school boards.
Yes.
And when Governor Wolf didn't get his way through a tantrum and decided to throw everybody into a tizzy over this, and it's been very unfortunate.
Yeah. And it just goes to show our American system of representative self-government limits the power of the state, or at least it's intended to limit the power of the state. And that's for a reason, because when, you know, as the saying, it is ever so, power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And that there's no other word for it. I know it sounds dramatic, but that this is a form of tyranny. And it's a petty tyranny, but it's a tyranny nonetheless. And, again, especially as Pennsylvanians look to the coming year and a campaign for who is going to be the next governor of Pennsylvania, I hope that these issues are front and center as to whether or not we have a leader who respects the Constitution, the separation of powers, the role played by local government versus state government. Because, as Tom Wolf's behavior has illustrated vividly, those distinctions matter. They matter a lot.
I think you're completely right. And I think it comes down to the power of the administrative state. It's like you said a little while ago, David, the government really has its hands in everything now through its regulatory powers. It really has its hands in just everybody, every little aspect of our life. And where that government reach comes into our lives is where we have given them power. And that's something that is only going to change from the top down. And it only will change if we have a governor who recognizes that it's something that needs to change and leads from the top and sort of resets the balance between the administrative agencies and the legislature and local governments and all those things it's really a culture and in government that needs to be reset.
Yeah, the time is, the time
well,
is
it
now.
Also, and it also, I think, Rebecca, shows the power of special interests.
True.
And that being the teacher unions in this regard, as we're talking about mask mandates, because that was something the teacher unions were calling for. They weren't getting their way. The governor uses that unilateral power. Also, at the same time, you don't see our governor imposing vaccination requirements for public school teachers because, well, the unions would oppose that. While you see that happening at the federal level, where President Biden is trying to impose that on federal workers, you are seeing the special interest unions pushing back on these things. So the power of the teacher unions in the decision making of Governor Tom Wolf is once again on display. So that administrative state, the power of these special interests, these are all unfortunately guiding the decision making that is harming the people of Pennsylvania.
Well, and these are, I mean, these are timeless themes. This is the way that these challenges face us in the present moment, but it really has been ever so that the fight for individual liberty and the fight to limit the power of the state over the people, you know, this goes back through all of human history, and we are not immune from, you know, from being called to participate in those battles as well, which is why, as the listeners always hear me say, representative self-government is not a spectator sport. You've got to choose to be informed, to live life with your brain turned on, and to exercise your citizenship.
And get off the sidelines.
Yes,
that's right.
Yes, sir. That's exactly right. And again, I hope that that's partly why you folks choose to join us, to tune us in, and to hear what we have to say. So anyway, this brings us to the end of the time that we have for this particular Capital Watch. But Matt, tell the listeners, where can they go to learn more about you and Commonwealth Partners and the things that you're doing?
Yes, Commonwealth Partners Chamber of Entrepreneurs can be found online at thecommonwealthpartners.com.
Outstanding. And Rebecca, where can people go to learn more about you and your organization?
Sure. They can find the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association at pmta.org.
Outstanding. And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org. And on the Pennsylvania Cable Network on Sunday mornings at 8:30 with PMA Perspective. So from Matt and Rebecca and me, thanks to all of you for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. As parents become more and more frustrated with school schedules disrupted by the COVID-19 pandemic, mask mandates, and left-wing indoctrination such as critical race theory being taught to their children, support for school choice options is on the rise. There is no doubt public education, both K-12 and university level, is badly broken. Taxpayers continue to pour ever-increasing amounts of money into systems that gobble up funds, fail to yield improved outcomes, and then demand even more money. Even worse, in an era when the spotlight is on racial equality, K-12 public education in Pennsylvania traps minority youth in underperforming schools with no way out. That has given rise to a unique coalition of school choice advocates, bringing together conservatives and many black leaders, unified around the belief that the best way to level the playing field for people of all colors is to receive a quality education. The Washington, D.C.-based Club for Growth recently launched a national campaign for school choice. In so doing, it commissioned a nationwide poll. It found that rebranding the debate as school freedom and talking in terms of school choice scholarships resulted in a higher level of support and more accurately describes the movement. The poll further found that there has been a 12% drop in overall satisfaction with the nation's public schools since the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic. This has resulted in a 5% jump in overall support for school choice or school freedom since 2015, and a 10-point surge among Democrats. When asked who is at fault for our faltering public school system, poll respondents first blamed politicians, 70% did, 53% placed the blame on union bosses. Over the years, there have been many legislative efforts aimed at providing parents with more freedom to select the educational option that is best for their child. The latest proposal is sponsored by State Representative Andrew Lewis of Dauphin County, and it would redirect billions of dollars in public school funding into individual scholarship accounts for each child. According to the Center Square, the Excellent Education for All Act would, quote, allow families to use the roughly $6,000 per student the state pays to afford tuition at private, parochial, and charter schools, end quote. It also proposes some reforms to charter schools, bolsters tax credit scholarship programs, and preserves some options that were developed to deal with the pandemic. In introducing the bill, Lewis said, quote, Pennsylvania is fortunate to have fantastic schools that come in different forms. If passed, House Bill 1 would give families access to scholarships that give them more options, end quote. And that is precisely what the Club for Growth poll found parents are seeking, the freedom to select the educational opportunity that best suits their child's individual needs. Some progress toward that goal was made in the current fiscal year state budget. Lawmakers successfully increased the cap on the Educational Improvement Tax Credit Program, or EITC, by $40 million. That program provides tax credits of up to $750,000 to businesses that donate money toward scholarships for private schools. It, however, is relatively small, given the overall state basic education budget tops $7 billion. The need to provide more flexibility in education does not end at the K-12 level. Changing occupational needs, along with a smaller student base, have scrambled the market for higher education. The Pennsylvania State System of Higher Education, or PASHE, is restructuring and merging some campuses due to the fiscal challenges and declining enrollment. Interest in technical schools and community colleges are growing as students confront the skyrocketing costs of a four-year degree. To provide more flexibility, State Representative Eric Nelson of Westmoreland County has introduced the Pennsylvania College Voucher Program. The Center Square reports that this program would redirect more than $580 million state taxpayer dollars that currently is allocated exclusively to the University of Pittsburgh, Temple University, and Penn State University directly to students in the form of grants that can be used at technical schools, community colleges, PASHE schools, private colleges, or major universities. All of these initiatives are efforts to provide parents and students with the freedom to select the educational opportunity, either K-12 or higher education, that best suits their individual needs and career goals. And while there is clear public support for moving state policy in this direction, powerful, vested, and frequently failing special interests stand in the way. But the time has come to give students and parents the financial freedom to choose. We can do that by funding students rather than by funding school districts or specific institutions of higher learning. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 26 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WLSH-AM in Lansford, WCNS-AM in Latrobe, along with WWSM-AM in Lebanon, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, all of whom have helped to underwrite the cost of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.